The next mile, the brave sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in, they broadcast out of the Black Belt, and catch the live stream from that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there, always full of the latest podcasts on Time for an Awakening, all the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, it's April 12th at 8:08 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you've been thinking about all week, different stories have broken during the week. So anything that's on your mind, or even in your locality, give us a call. We can talk about it. We might get a little update tonight from one of the activists that have been on our program before, Reverend Raymond Brown down in the New Orleans area. Might be on with us this evening. Give us a brief update on what's been going on in reference to the church burnings down there and the apprehension of this white sheriff's or deputy's son down there in one of the parishes down there in Louisiana. We'll see if Reverend Brown gets a hold of us. Other than that, we'll be in Freestyle Friday mode. Again, anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You know, this week is one of the, as always, up and down, but some interesting things. And I'm definitely interested in hearing, getting more, if possible, what happened with the church burnings in Louisiana. So that'll be helpful in, you know, just getting clarity of what's going on and the impact of that. And, you know, especially since, you know, I may be unjustly making a tie between the congressional hearing on white nationalism and the, you know, the possibility of the individual might be tied to the thinking anyway, if not necessarily an organization. So, you know, it'd just be good to get some insight.
Yeah, you know, that I think that might tie into the conversation that we'll have with Reverend Raymond Brown, an activist and organizer down in Louisiana, to get a little update on what has been going on. I know that's not his area, his parish where he lives, because he's in the New Orleans area, but he's got connections all over the state, and we want to reach out to Reverend Raymond, activist and organizer down in Louisiana. Reverend Raymond Brown. Reverend Brown, how are you, sir?
How you doing, sir?
How are you?
Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
You hear
me? Sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And first of all, thank you to great heroes and the struggle for justice. I want to just say thank you for bringing up this very important issue that's going on in Louisiana, church burning.
Reverend,
I'm open up for any questions.
Reverend Brown, give us a little, give our Time for Awakening a little detail on what has been going on. I mean, we've read some of the reports of, I think, 3 to maybe 4 black churches had been burned down in Louisiana. They caught the sheriff's deputy of one of the parishes down there. And you can see right now that they're trying to clean up his image. That he had some type of
down,
yes. Give us what you've heard on your end.
You know, first of all, yes, sir. First of all, St. Andrew Parish, just to give y'all an overview. Just let me know if my voice is close enough to the phone.
Yes, sir.
The St. Andrew Parish is adjacent to Lafayette Parish. And everybody know about Lafayette. You might not know about St. Landry because it's a very small place. Eunice and Opelousas are the biggest little towns, small towns and little cities within St. Landry Parish. So you got Opelousas, Portberry, and Eunice, Louisiana, within that parish.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 3 towns where majority of blacks are reside: Opelousas, Eunice, and Portberry. Of course, it was Portberry and Opelousas that the incident took place.
Okay.
Okay, now, this is the problem that we have. The governor, as you know, the governor and some of the legislators and a pastor of St. Mark Baptist Church, I think it is, held a news conference 2 days ago. And in that news conference, the pastor was quick to forgive and all that.
Wait a minute. It was a black pastor?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
So the pastor was quick to forgive the perpetrator. And I think the governor set it up. As you know, the Essence Festival is only 2 months away, which brings in over $200 million to the state in 3 days. $200 million in 3 days. And other events that are going on. So the state, this state, Louisiana, remember, it's 33% African American. That's a large, you know, as you know, Mississippi is one of the most populated black states adjacent to Mississippi. So here in New Orleans, actually, Mississippi and New Orleans, they so close to each other that everybody in Mississippi, black, comes to Louisiana, and we go to Mississippi. So it's like kissing cousins. We worked together.
Okay.
It was a big black population. Just give me an overview. So they were threatened that if activists would have got together like myself and others and would have started talking about racism, it was a racist act. It would have gave, and then the election going on for governor. That's another thing I want to tell y'all. So by the election going on, and the governor is a Democrat in a red state. Understand that, y'all. This is a red state. This is a, actually, this is a Republican state. I call it redneck state, me. Okay. But the election going on for governor, which will take place in October, so the governor rushed. He rushed to a news conference with these pastors. There were about three pastors and a couple of state representatives and state senators in the news conference.
Okay.
Throwing water on the fire. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, no. Go ahead.
And so a young man, me and you discussed this. A young man, he's very young. He don't look 21. Y'all saw his picture. But he's 21 years old, a white supremacist. And it, of course, the leadership in St. Landry are not saying it's a rape, it's a hate crime. But in actuality, it is. I might go down there and meet. You know what? I'm thinking about going there and speak out against this racial hate that is being perpetrated upon the black church in the black community in general. This young man's father is a prominent deputy sheriff within the St. Landry Sheriff Department. I need to be brought out that his father most likely is involved in white nationalism.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Now, if you look at some of the reports, they kind of spin a story like this guy is on his own, but he's the son of this sheriff. So whatever activities he was involved in, his daddy had to know what he was doing.
Exactly.
Or maybe brought him up in that mindset.
Exactly. Let me just tell you, St. Landry Parish, and I still go in there, but I did some organizing in that parish with Joy Fisher. He deceased now, but we held a protest rally, and the mayor of Opelousas, which is in St. Landry, was opposed to us having a rally.
Now, he's black?
But yeah, he was black. Well, yes.
Okay.
Having a rally. Yet, in the same breath, he spoke about Dr. King.
just to make sure I'm clear about this, the sheriff is from St. Landry Parish.
Exactly.
And St. Landry Parish is tied to Opelousas. Is that what you mean?
Opelousas.
It's tied to
Opelousas. It's a city.
It's
the biggest city, right.
And
the black mayor. Exactly.
And one of the churches that was set on fire was in Opelousas.
Opelousas.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yes, sir. Now, so your audience can understand that in Louisiana, we have this Cajun culture. Like, Cajun culture, mm-hmm. radical, all like that.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the black people that living in those areas are quiet about the racism and the injustice that's going on. In that same parish, that same racist parish, they have what you call, y'all gonna laugh about this here, Civil War reenactment, where the white supremacists have 200 to 300 Confederate flags just walking through the street. So for the But the sheriff of Guidry, he's a sheriff, Sheriff Guidry, to say that we are safe when you got the Confederate flag flying everywhere.
Now, let me get this one. They have a reenactment every year where they have all these reenactor Confederate soldiers.
And
are you saying, would that sheriff be participating in that?
That's what I'm saying. Is that, right. That's what I'm saying. Is that the reenactment chose the... y'all know about the Battle of New Orleans and all that, and they try to maintain Southern Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
With that, mm-hmm. only Southern Manifesto only mean white domination right. of the Southern states. That's all that means.
Right.
But the sheriff Guidry acted like yesterday. Acted like there's no harm being done to the black community. I mean, you can actually Google it, Sheriff Guidry's name, and it'll pop up and the video. What he was saying, like it's an isolated incident. We know that police, that we got documents to prove that within them areas, there are active sheriffs who are tied to white supremacist organizations.
Hmm. Now, Reverend Brown, let me jump in and I'll let you get back because I don't want you to lose your train of thought.
Go ahead, that's okay.
You said that they have these active reenactments where they march through these black towns?
With exactly, see, give you kind of like a small insight.
Go ahead.
When you enter into Opelousas, it's a funny word anyway, Opelousas. The first beginning of the town is like 80 to 90% black. These towns are not no huge cities like New Orleans and Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
I would say black population in Opelousas might be 15, 20,000, if that many. That's not a large black population.
Okay.
So there are marsh black neighborhoods. Now, remind you that blacks don't understand the Confederacy. Many of them don't understand what it stood for. So blacks were lining the streets.
To watch the parade?
To watch it and shoot pictures and dance at the music. Now,
wait a minute.
That's a lack of education. That's a lack of education. Then you have a group of blacks out there who were putting their thumbs down, but not really being vocal at these white supremacists. You know, they'll be giving gestures. They march through the streets, hundreds of Confederate flags, hundreds of white power symbols, KKK, dressed up in camouflage, dressed
every
up in
year.
Yeah, every year. And so we have this. So you get the mindset, if you go in the white neighborhood in Opelousas or in St. Landry Parish, you will send shockwaves through the white neighborhood because they will be calling you the N-word. You know, y'all got a crime problem. Don't bring y'all problem here. Because white folks in these sections of the country, particularly Louisiana, do not want to be confronted. They do not want to be confronted.
But they have a black mayor?
They got a black mayor. Okay. Now, remind you that the mayor in Opelousas, if he's under indictment right now for embezzlement. Now, if he did it on a federal, the feds got him. Now, he might have done called a plea. Or he basically, see, people understand that you can be indicted unless you are convicted. You still can hold office in Louisiana. Yes, yes, yes. In Louisiana, I can indict you on charges. If you're not convicted, I could be mayor under a six-count indictment. So the black mayor who've been embezzling campaign money and running a Ponzi scheme, yes, he was, have been indicted on these charges. Now, I think the election coming up, but anyway, that's another subject. But the mayor of Opelousas have not addressed this horrible issue. In the city council, which have, I think they have just three black members on the city council and Opelousas and the rest. I think they got a majority white, I think. Have not held a press conference to condemn this terrorist act. Simple. You burn down my whole church, right? But it's simple also. When the whole church is gone, not just the front burned, the back, and it could be rehabited, they can go there and renovate it, and they got to build a whole new church.
Yeah, I saw
Go ahead. This white guy burned down the churches. He burned them down, but yet this is not an act of terrorism.
Now let me get this right. So the church in Opelousas, that's one. Then it was a church in Pokeberry,
and it was three churches, two in Opelousas.
Oh, two in Opelousas.
Mm-hmm. Right, and one in Pokeberry.
And were they located in proximity to each other? The ones in Opelousas.
There was the one in Opelousas actually. You know how were you and how the country is. If you live in Lawtail is like 5 miles from Opelousas, right?
Mm.
Well, the media will say that church is in Opelousas, but it being like a little 3 miles out of Opelousas in a country section of where it's dark. Y'all know how country look.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark. Mm-hmm. They don't have cameras up. There's no modern satellites and stuff like that, like in the city. So this did not happen like within the city limits of Opelousas. It happened like a mile or 2 miles right out of Opelousas in St. Landry Parish. But media say, now Pokeberry, I'm going to tell you about Pokeberry. That's deep country white nationalist territory. And Pokeberry, I can tell you that right now. But you see, he burnt them churches down, not within where the heavy black population of the city is, right when you is leaving Opelousas in the countryside, when it get dark and there's no lights out there, he went and set those churches on fire. He burned them up. And the governor, the mayor, the sheriff department, all is covering it up as just an act of arson.
But no hate crime. Now,
no hate crime.
Now, Reverend Brown, you mentioned that the governor had a press conference and called out a black clergy ask for forgiveness and basically say that this was not a hate crime.
This what happened, okay?
Go ahead.
The pastor, I mean, his name, I could pull up his name, but the pastor of St. Mark Baptist Church, whatever you call it, he's been the face of this on CNN everywhere, okay? And during the news conference, you had all the press there, some of the national press. The pastor got up and he made the statement about Paul said this and the Bible said that.
Oh boy. Okay.
This has nothing to do. This is a criminal investigation, right? Criminal investigation. He quoted scriptures of the Bible, which they always use black folk. You use the Bible to confuse black folk. Y'all know that. They're using scriptures to say, oh, you know what? We forgive this white man who terrorized us and It's all good. And the governor set that up to water it down. That really angered me, and I'm thinking about going out there and fire this thing up. I've been calling for a statewide march against racism and injustice. And I put the word racism because, as y'all know, injustice can come from black leaders too. But I call it racism and injustice because injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And we see a rise in white power, white supremacy. One thing white folks get is just calling us the N-word because the young black males today are quick to use the gun. So, I mean, we were submissive like the 60s and the 50s when black folks were called. We just go home and pray and believe God, but you don't have that kind of mindset in the black community anymore where black folks will allow you to abuse them without putting up any kind of resistance. And so the white supremacists will not only be burning down churches, they'll be burning down homes and burning, throwing gasoline on you.
Okay.
You talk about a church, they're going to start burning black folks in the street with gasoline.
Now, Reverend Brown, let me make this clear, because you've been an activist down in that area for a long time. And you see some of your colleagues, like you mentioned, the Reverend there, they're standing up as a buffer, or to run interference in reference to calling this thing like it is a hate crime.
Exactly.
You mentioned that it's a reluctance for black people to say anything in Louisiana. Now. New Orleans, I guess maybe some of the bigger cities might be a little different. Now, I'm just speculating. In the smaller towns, this reluctance that you categorize it, do you still see this as the same fear that some of our ancestors felt 70, 50, maybe 100 years ago? That fear, do you still see that?
Yes, sir. I agree with you that there was some of our ancestors, unfortunately, that compromised, that you had a segment of in a group of those ancestors who feared for their life and were submissive, the turn of the cheek type of mentality.
Okay.
Biblical turn of the cheek, submissive type of mentality that permeates today in the minds of many black people. Now, bear in mind, black folks are quick to start a riot on themselves and fight and burn up the towns and shoot at themselves. When it comes down to defending themselves against white terror and white supremacy, somehow we lose. Violence begin to leave our hearts and minds. Like, you know, we gotta get along. I think it's power. I think racism is power. So they're looking at economic power. The white man got power, so they're looking at their jobs being stripped away. They're looking at the influence in the community being destroyed. So even the preachers and the low-level elected officials are afraid to say anything because most of their money comes from white from the white community. So this is what you got. You got fear because in those towns, it's total white rule. There's no black don't hold no significant power. And that's the reason why you got this type of quietness and reluctant to speak out and come forward. As a matter of fact, they called me way from the city to say things that they scared to say.
Okay.
I don't want to hold up all y'all time. I know.
No. We needed some of this information on what is going, because black folks all around the country get watered down news from these news agencies. That's why if I know people in certain areas or they have been on this program, such as yourself, I'd rather reach out to them and get the real story of what's going on so our people can know what's going on in these areas where our people live at.
Okay.
I just can't. Go ahead.
Yeah.
One thing that No, go ahead, brother.
I'm listening, sir.
No, go ahead.
Okay. And I look at the, I'm 58 years old, so I'm speaking from a position where I'm really not a baby boomer anymore. They can call me that if they want, but anyway. Looking at the hip-hop community, the people 35, 36 and under. My daughter's 36, 37. They don't quite understand what you and me understand about racism. And they fear because of economic deprivation. Let me get the word right. Economic deprivation. They fear backlash from white America so severe that they will be in the unemployment line. That's the reason why they're scared out there.
Okay.
Because even the hip-hop generation have turned to what? To the drug culture. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And they turn to drug culture. Therefore, they defenseless against any kind of racism because every move they make, law enforcement got them under a microscope. Y'all go out there and protest. Y'all gonna be in jail next week. I have led protesters where people drop out of the protest when they see the police and act like they're on side of the road. They started out with us marching. Then they see the police, they go to getting on side of the road and like be waving at them. They don't want to be seen.
I can't help it, Brad. I apologize.
Richard, you laughing, but that's sad, Richard. I'm telling you. Listen, when Reverend Brown said that when the white supremacists marching through the town of Popeberry and Opelousas with these Confederate reenactments, that black folks is out there dancing and singing.
Yeah, because they had that music. See, they had that Zydeco music, rocking them and all them. I mean, you know, white folks always play black music, right? But you might hear a song from, I don't know, Buckwheat or something, rocking them somebody. And the black folks don't understand that. But they say reenactment, the parade reenactment. They buying beer, barbecuing. That's the Confederacy, fool. You would be a slave left up to them.
Now, isn't the Zydeco Festival in Appaloosa?
No, it's in Lafayette, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, Lafayette. Okay.
Yeah, you know, remember that Lafayette and Appaloosa, it's a 20 mile window.
Oh, okay.
That's all. So you go 20 miles, you know, go down 49, I-49, 20 miles, you're in Appaloosa. So the Zydeco Festival, it be held in different parks and places like that, in little small towns and stuff. And but anyway, I'm glad to come on your show. I really appreciate it to your listening audience.
Reverend Brown. Stay with us for about maybe 15 minutes because I got a call or two I want you to take, and then a couple more questions before you have to go.
All right, go ahead.
Let me go to Newport News. Newport News?
Hello, comrades. What's up?
How are you, sir?
Brother Raymond Brown, don't we follow each other on Facebook? This is Otis Griffin. What's up, my
All
friend?
All power, brother. All power, brother. You know it.
It's a small world. I told these gentlemen about a year ago about coming down to New Iberia and doing some work, so I kind of understand what you're saying. They had to escort me back to Lafayette to get me on the interstate and back to Texas safely because I ruffled some feathers for some old white boys down there.
Look, you said something
about the people that are on the wrong side of the law, but what I shared with them is when I went down there to do that HUD project, because white people control everything associated with economics, even the employed people, majority of them are afraid of losing their jobs or their mortgages or their rent.
Yes, sir.
So the reason I wanted to call in is because I know you do this work extensively. It's not just the people on the wrong side of the law. which is normally when the youth are doing good, they're on the spearhead of protesting. But the people who are paying these mortgages, that are employed, they know if they get unemployed, they're out on the street too. I mean, you speak on that. I mean, be honest about all of it, brother. They basically have everybody under lockdown there. More power to you. I wish it was more I could do. Stay in touch.
Yes, sir. Oh, wow. That was great.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Yes, sir. That was great, brother.
Listen, but Reverend Brown, the mayor, you told me in the private conversation, I want you to mention this on the air, because that's the problem that we're having nationally with black representation. You mentioned that the mayor in Appaloosa, which is a black man, wanted to criminalize these young people wearing their pants.
Sad.
Where they would have 6 months in jail or pay $1,000 in fine. Which, wait a minute. That might as well mean 6 months in jail, because the young person ain't got $1,000. But talk about that. Go ahead.
And if I can remember, I hate to say it, but, you know, if I can remember that bear name, but anybody listening can Google Appaloosa's mayor, Saggy Pass Law, and put my name in there, Reverend Raymond Brown, and you'll see where the ACLU and, well, I wasn't with the ACL. Y'all did it on my. I did. We both spoke out against it. We didn't do a joint, anything joint. Mm-hmm. But we both spoke out against it. So I'm gonna make that clear. But the mayor and the police chief was black, and the mayor black. They was trying to bump up revenue by using the arrest of black males to increase revenue in the city, because the city was suffering financially due to lack of taxes. And they proposed that they ban, they ain't say SAG, they use the term indecent exposure of your trousers, which was SAG. Any pants that go below your buttocks, that was a criminal offense.
Mm.
And we felt that as a matter of fact, I stated in the paper that if he don't pull it off the agenda, that I'm coming down with a group and we going to jail. I just told him straight up, because, you know, it's like y'all trying to criminalize everything, trying to put black folks in jail. And I said, don't you think there's enough of black folks incarcerated already? Then he got to the city council, and they thought about the police brutality already bad out there. How it would have increased. I said, Mayor, you are giving the police more, the racist cops out there, you're giving them more power to stop black folk. That's all you're doing, harassment.
And this is the mayor, Julius Alcindor.
Okay, what I want to say is that I don't know since that time, because that mayor I'm talking about, he got indicted. Am I told you?
Mm-hmm.
So the mayor in there now might be a different mayor. Now, the mayor I'm talking about, that happened in 2016 when we attacked him. Now, where he at now? I don't know. But if you Google it, Saggy Pants Law, Appaloosa, it'll have the mayor and the police chief name, Bo Black, in that article.
Mm.
Now, let me tell you something. gonna make you laugh. The city jail, Opelousas City Jail, right, was proposing an ordinance at the city council that would make inmates, you're gonna laugh at this, pay for their own medical bill. This is real.
make them pay for their own medical bills.
Yeah, you ever heard a thing like that? You incarcerated me, right? I didn't ask you to incarcerate me for no selling no weed, having an argument, or some frivolous crime. You're gonna incarcerate me. And they try to propose an ordinance that would say that inmates. Yeah, it was stupid, though. I mean, even for a black man to entertain, black men to even entertain that kind of foolishness, it just spins my head.
And you said that there's a election coming up that for the governorship.
Exactly.
And which is held by a Republican now.
It's held by a Democrat.
It's held by a Democrat now.
Right. See, remember, this is a red state.
Mm. Oh, a red state, huh? I see.
Yeah, so the governor, Bill Edwards, called the preachers there to throw water on the fire. Because he know his chances of getting reelected, if he would have came out and said it was a hate crime, the white numbers would have went down for him because white folks don't want to face racism. So what he did, he ran and got those preachers. And the preachers came with the word of God. Actually, what they did, they helped the governor win reelection, Democrat get reelected. But this is a red state. They can get rid of him on election day like that because this is actually Louisiana is a Trump state. Would you believe that?
Yeah.
This is a Donald Trump state. And look, a stronghold of Donald Trump. That's a weird thing. A Democratic governor representing a Trump state. Oh, Lord.
Will the congregations be able to rebuild those churches?
The one that the preacher was in a news conference, his place is burned down.
Yeah, I saw a news report. I don't know whether it was the same preacher, but one of the preachers was talking to the news commentator or the news reporter. And it, like you said, it was, you seen cinders. I mean, this church was burned to the ground. It wasn't just burned up, Richard.
There's nothing to salvage from them historical churches, some of them 120 years old.
Oh, yeah?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that memory is gone.
Did y'all hear what I said? The white guy was not charged with aggravation. He was charged with simple. So, okay, let's do the phrase of the trial. He's charged with simple arson, right? By the time the DA, white DA get it, he's going to be charged with something lesser than that.
Okay.
And go to anger management. And get psychiatric treatment.
You know, I don't know how some of clergy people can justify, because, you know, when he burned those churches, anybody, you could have had somebody in there that was a janitor in there, somebody that might have been in there praying, some elders.
Sleeping overnight.
Exactly. How are you just going to just let them get away with something like that? I see where the NAACP down there was saying this is a hate crime and it should be prosecuted as such. But, right. You know, I knew just from the track record of what's going on around the country that they was going to get a cadre of pastors to get up there. And I didn't see the press conference, but I'm not surprised in what you said. I'm just wondering how they feel in reference to you, Reverend Brown, because I know your activities. You've been on the program before. I guess they don't even want you coming into some of the meetings where clergy is meeting, do they?
Well, no, they don't. And if I walk inside of a meeting and they, my name circle, they're going to say, he's with the Black Panther Party. No. That's what they say. You're radical and all that. Then the preacher's going to bring him in the back and sit down. Look, I know you come here to speak and I don't mind you saying something, but don't, try not to just shake it up too much, Brown. We know you, but you can say something, but, respect us, this is our churches and we don't want, the many of these white companies and stuff, they donate to our charitable cause. So it's always, we just slaves. And we haven't been free from slavery yet. And so, as a matter of fact, I wouldn't even go down there and try to meet with them because I know that my position can't be compromised by a few niggas the white man gonna throw at me. White folks know me. They know one thing, you can't buy me off. So when the person says, well, y'all can forget it, you can't offer him that. But these white preachers, remember now, only one. Three churches.
Mm-hmm.
And only had the rest of the pastors just stood there while the pastor in Opelousas spoke. The rest of the pastors said nothing. You mean tell you burn down my church? First of all, I'm quite sure you don't laugh at me when I say this here. they got their GoFundMe accounts. I'm quite sure they got their GoFundMe accounts going on right now.
But you know what, Reverend Brown, that and you helping us unpack this, what you're doing for us in the northern cities and in the western and northern cities and states and in the western cities and states, because I don't think in Elliot, I'm just speaking out of my own naivete. We don't understand the level of oppression that is going on in those southern towns.
Where
you located again?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Oh Lord, hey brother, you my brother. I worked up in that area a little bit with the Abu Jamal.
Mumia.
Yeah, I worked a little bit, not a lot. I'm not going to exaggerate, but I worked a little bit, and there is an organization in New York City called Citizens Action Center.
Mm-hmm.
Mumia had a lot of white hippies and stuff, so-called socialists, working for the free him. And so when I left New York with a black brother named Johnny Stevenson, we came to y'all city. We put posters up for a great big march they had for Mumia. That was years and years and years ago. And I worked in the new Black Panther Party. We got a chapter in Philly. Well, I'm not with them no more, but a chapter in Philly. I came to Philly and did some what we call drills and maneuvers. Not in it no more, but we did the drills out there, the new Black Panther. So, man, you live in a city. You live in Philadelphia, Lord have mercy.
And I don't think we understand what you described that's going on in those counties like Appaloosa or Pokeberry, and in relationship to the same thing occurs. It's not direct. We don't have every year Confederate reenactors with the rebel flag.
They call it Confederate reenactment, where
mm-hmm.
the Confederacy get their Confederate flag, white power, this and that. They have all kind of Andrew Jackson, all those Confederates, Robert E. Lee, all of them, all those Confederate soldiers. Because sometimes I'm gonna be honest, I get the Union leaders' name mixed up with the Confederate. Because sometimes I just get them all of them look all of them white to me anyway. But they have all the Confederacy. A lot of soldiers and stuff. Pictures, statues, music being played, barbecue pits, dancing, and actually reenacting it.
Like, and also members of the sheriff departments. I mean,
they provide the protection, everything. I think they provide escort protection and. So it's a strange thing. At all the parades, the police make an arrest at most of the parades, right? Is that still on?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. At most of the parades in those areas, like, you know, they have to have all the Zydeco parades and all kind of different associated pleasure clubs have all the stuff in the streets. You know, each group have their turn of showing off the homecoming or this homecoming that. They arrest some black folks every time there's a black parade, black folks go to jail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every time the reenactment come, nobody go to jail. That's something, you know, that's something to think about. There's always some black youth shooting at each other or fighting or something going on. But when the Confederacy come through, the black youth like in being submission in obedience. Like, we can't come out there and start shooting just this. Oh, no, indeed.
Oh, wow.
It's like when the blacks have their little homecomings, you know, how they do, y'all. They put on their suits and all that, get on horseback and all that. Everybody show off their clothes, all that. They have all that kind of stuff. It'd be shootouts, fights, people going to jail. But when that reenactment passed through that town, it'd be like heaven on earth. Them black folk respect white supremacy. They respect them.
Mm.
You know, that's a case to be studied. Why do we respect white supremacy and don't respect ourselves?
And it's no different here. It's no different in the cities. I mean, Philadelphia, Chicago. I mean, it's, you know, Detroit, St. Louis, Atlanta.
Yep.
Reverend Brown, I'm
I don't hold y'all no more. I got to go, but I really appreciate you bringing me on. Let me know when you want me to come on again. I'm going to invite some people to call in. I got a lot of people that I am affiliated with on Facebook and everywhere that would love your show. And I just need to get a couple of weeks in advance on the topic, and I would push it for you. And, support this cause that you are doing on this show.
Well, Reverend Brown, you know, listen, we'll talk soon. You know, I'll be in touch with you.
You know, give out my phone number.
Yeah, go ahead. Give out any information you want to.
Yes, sir. You can call me direct at 504-906-6285. My email address is meanyou@gmail.com. brownmeanyou@gmail.com, because I was about to put brown by any means necessary. But my wife say no, you know, you're going to shake them up too hard. You put the word brown 59 by any means, they gonna interpret it as you mean gun using arms against the police. So just go it on and oh yeah, they'll use it now. When you say by any means necessary, you scare a lot of people.
Okay.
I appreciate both of you.
Oh, you listen. Brother Brown, before you go off, I've just read a report, and I posted it on the Time for Awakening page, that the killers of Alton Sterling, they're making the residents pay for the legal. Do you know anything about that story?
Yeah, I heard about that. And the mayor of Baton Rouge is a lady.
Okay.
Now, I got to give her props under the pressure that she was under. Knowing that the white people support her campaign.
It's a black woman.
You know, black folk campaign is financed through white contributors. Y'all know that already.
Okay.
I think she spoke out very strongly against the officers that was involved in the Alton Sterling case. And, but I still see, you know, it wasn't as strong as me or you, but knowing that she under that type of pressure, that if she say, you know, I mean, the mayor should have, I mean, let me just break it down. Obama administration should have indicted those cops. But it didn't. So when people tell me Trump, when Trump got it, you know, Trump got it, and you know no indictment was coming down from the feds. You
mm-hmm.
know that.
Mm-hmm.
But Obama, Eric Holder and them, they had to videotape. Y'all saw the videotape just came out about a year ago, time passed fast. Well, the police actually had the gun to his head, right? Mm. Threatening to kill him if he didn't get on the ground. I mean, cussing him and saying, I'm going to kill you. You know, cussing. We never saw that, right?
Yeah, you just saw the one where he was on the ground.
All right, but we never saw the beginning of the scuffle. The beginning of the scuffle was, and the brother had to go in his pocket to pull out a gun because the police could not see his gun in his pocket, right? It was a call made that he had a gun. Okay, at that time, you know, it's an open carry state now. At that time, it wasn't. Or Alton Sterling debt got them to change the law. Republican came and changed the law to open carry state. You don't have to hide your gun no more in Louisiana.
Okay.
But those cops took advantage of Alton. A gun. Police took his gun out, put it to his head, and he used profanity. This is the new tape came out. I'll blow your MFing head off, he tells Alton Sterling. That was enough of evidence. First of all, he threatened to kill a man when the man didn't pose no threat, right?
Okay.
The man didn't pose any threat, right?
Yes.
Resisting arrest is not a threat. It's just that you're trying to run from me, trying to get away from me. So resisting arrest is not a threat. So he threatened him, and when he got him on the ground, he sort of, he looked down, said, oh, he got a gun. And he shot him and killed him. He had a way out. He didn't know that person was filming that from a distance.
So he knew of the gun before he was even on the ground, is what you're saying.
Well, somebody called and said he had a gun. Right?
Okay.
All right. Of course you have a gun if you're selling, you making money selling CDs, of course, in a dragged out, drug-confested community, you will have some kind of heat on you. They know that anyway. You can't operate a business without a gun in the ghetto. That's a no-no.
So they know he had a gun, but he wasn't posing any threat to anybody, okay?
Okay.
So the police put the gun to his head, and you MF get down and all that. We found out that. And with the Obama administration, they had the tapes already. Eric Holder decided not to indict those cops. I mean, he had enough evidence to convict them. But the black leadership failed us.
Reverend Brown.
Yes, sir. So,
I want to thank you.
Sir.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
And I know you're going to continue it, and we'll be in touch soon.
Now, where you at on Facebook again?
Time for an Awakening, the radio program. Just punch in Time for Awakening. You'll see it.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Peace and love to both of you.
All right.
All right, man.
We're going to take a brief break, Richard. When we come back, we'll go into open forum. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, before we go to break, I just want to kind of go back to something Reverend Brown said, and you mentioned it again about us. Some of our people take for granted, you know, the circumstances, or might not realize the circumstances that some of our brothers and sisters live under. When Reverend Brown said that he tries to conduct these protests, marches, and gatherings, and he said when they're marching down the street, the next thing you know, they done jumped on the side. When the police come, they jump on the side and act like they just watch. I mean, you laugh. I mean, right off, you know, and your initial response would be to laugh, but then that's sad, Richard.
Yeah.
When our people, you afraid to stand up for anything. The fear is just there. How are you going to have people march through your neighborhood with a Confederate reenactment where they got all these pictures of these white supremacists? And he says that sometimes they don't even wear Confederate uniforms. They wear it's white supremacist garb. And you're out there dancing because they got barbecue. You're dancing and singing. I mean.
It's something we really have to wrestle with, how it's manifesting, how our conditioning is manifesting itself in many areas, and how it's reinforced. I mean, you know, Reverend Brown and Otis were saying that there is blatant economic tie. See, here, in my opinion, you know, here people are pass off the reason why you're not you're subservient is because you are applying yourself. They recognize they have to be subservient, or they won't be able to make a livelihood for themselves.
Okay.
You know what I mean? The condition is the same. The approach is different. And it's more blatant there. And I don't think, the psychological and this, when they have those kind of, you know, we don't have a major reenactments, whether it be Union or Confederate. You got Confederate soldiers every year. Beer drinking, you know, marching, and all the support every year. What kind of psychological condition that is happening to a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old child, black child? And then they go home and their parents is speaking because they works a certain place. You know, it can't do a certain thing. Or the gang, quote unquote, gangbangers or drug dealers. What psychological thing occurs to them when they ain't selling them drugs too much to people in white communities. And as what Reverend Brown said to me, it seemed to me is that they ain't even able to go in white communities. They ain't saying white people don't buy drugs from them, but you know they're not doing that. That type of microscope, and then the police department is in. You know, the sheriff department is all involved in it. No, it's not a funny. It's not a laughing matter. I know, Elliot.
I know it. It's And I mean, and this here brings it to light again. This sheriff's son, or deputy sheriff, or deputy or whatever, he's the son of one of these deputies. They know what's going on. He's a supremacist. Dad's supremacist. I mean, he probably come from a family of supremacists. So this is not surprising. But then he mentions about his colleagues, and I'll use the term loosely, his colleagues standing up with this governor, ready to give forgiveness. Just like he said, somebody could have been sleeping in the church or praying at night. The janitor could have been in there, anything. Richard, I saw one of the film clips. The one church I saw, now he said all three of them was like that, but the one church I saw was burned to the, like a crisp ground. To the ground.
Yeah. The one I seen, it was the whole side. It was only a little portion left. And that one that was 128 years old.
We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We're in Freestyle Friday mode. And we'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court,
or a city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
And leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. People, you can't feel that you're missing them. Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk. Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. For your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a freedom party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
so you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and 927 in the city of Philadelphia. We're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard, do want to make a couple comments on some of the things that we talked about with Reverend Brown. That was on with us, activist minister, activist reverend out of New Orleans. Let's go back to Newport News. Brother Otis wanted to make another comment. Yes, sir.
Yeah, what's happening, comrades? I keep telling y'all I got my tentacles everywhere. my man, Brother Ray Brown, he touched on something that I tried to say earlier. You know, we're kind of split up from people that live in the city and people that live in the rural part. But I think I told y'all, when I was doing those HUD projects all over Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, and sometimes into Tennessee, this is what I saw. A system set up so that even though blacks had the majority, because they had no wealth, I'm going to tell you certain little things they do quickly. When you run for public office, rather than it be a paid position that you can live on and sustain your family, it's considered a part-time job. Right here where I live, as large as this area is, Newport News, Mike Vick's relatives, one of, I think his sister or his mother, Tina, is the vice mayor. But she couldn't get that job unless she had some other income. Now, I'm going to tie this into something that's really breaking up right now. We're going through some changes. That's part of what we've been discussing for the last several years with this ADOS thing. The idea of reparations is not just what you see some of these followers hollering, cut the check, cut the check. It is about basically some of what Sandy Darity had in his 10-point plan. Redoing some of these small towns where you have to have shared property taxes. These places are getting away from this because what they're doing, even with the school system, is they cut off things so that rich white areas that have high income can have decent schools, but the poor areas, because the property taxes are supposed to be spent exactly where you live, you don't get anything. That's part of what the reparations package that we're seeking as a people has to be. You have to be able to participate in your government and hold a position without having to have, quote, wealth. That's part of what's wrong with this country. And that's why people can get away with the mess they're doing in Philly, the mess they're doing in Opelousa, because people have ideas and want to participate, but you can't give up feeding your family to risk getting out in the street and being locked up for 6, 7, 8 months. White folks walk away and can write a check and go home and get a lawyer. That is part of what we have to look at as a people. That's one of the reasons I don't understand some of this petty fighting we're doing, because we really need to be focusing on writing what reparations really looks like. Long-term generational reciprocity for us. It ain't just cutting the check. It's about finding out what people down there in small towns like that need to have their life back. And then another thing I want to touch on. Louisiana is a kind of archaic state. So when they say simple arson, guess what their simple arson is based on? Whether or not something that burned is over or under, over the price of $500, they limit what the punishment is, something like a $1,500 fine and no more than 5 years in jail. But if the property damage is over $500, each one of those counts actually can be as much as 15 years and $25,000 fine, I think, for each count. I put it in your chat just to make sure. I couldn't remember the exact figures. But my point to you is there's other stuff going on there, too. If he's under 25 and a first-time offender, they can give him deferred punishment regardless of what his sentence is and move away. So there's all kind of ways that this boy can get away with what he did and still have a clean record the rest of his life. That's all I wanted to say, bro. That's the stuff we need to change.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you.
Yeah. You know, if I can, I can build, or and I'm going to be reacting. You know, and I agree with Brother Otis what he was saying in relationship to that. But what impressed me in what Reverend Brown was saying was the point of that I don't think money or tax, realignment is addressing is our cultural. And being maybe male chauvinist, but a cultural manhood, right? Because when we as a people, if we even have the money, if we had the laws in place, and we did have a moment in history when those things were done, and I think the other week you read after the Civil War when the general was asking those ministers, what do they want, right? They were clear what they wanted, and they had land to do building. And in some cases, a lot of cases, a lot of small towns were developed. But what happened when the strength that we had to maintain that control by a militaristic outside force that wanted to regain the wealth that they didn't even lose, right? What happened? Well, we lost that. And when we interview the black farmers, and you speak about it all the time, all the land that was under black farming holding, what happened to it? We lost it. We lost it, not necessarily, it wasn't that we did, our productive ability wasn't. It was something in our cultural ability in confronting white supremacy, militaristic, assault that we didn't actually engage. And I don't know if it's because of the historical experience of slavery, and quote unquote being under domination, but we have not been able to, that's in the northern cities or in the southern rural areas, have not been able to hold off the frontal assault of organized white militias, formal and informal. And unless we can be able to do that, we can be redistributed all the kind of wealth or assets. But if we cannot control them, protect them, then culturally, we're going to lose them again. And that's what I heard. You know, that's the reaction I had and what Reverend Brown was speaking to. And I see what's happening in Chicago, Philadelphia, and Detroit. I mean, when he spoke about that thing about the policing to make money, wasn't that in St. Louis? They said a lot of the policing that was going on and finding was to build up the economic coffers of the city. That they were just, you know, just creating fines on black people. So it's something we have to do culturally to fortify ourselves in order to be able to, because we know they are organized, whether it's subtly or overtly, they're organized to be able to carry out militaristic campaigns. And they are part of the apparatus, the state apparatus, and they have informal. So those drilling, you know, reenacted, those reenactors, you don't think that they are, they're serious about that? They don't carry a belief system in that? They don't carry a pride that they're passing on to their children and in those families of what they represent and what they're willing to do if they feel threatened again? But at the same time, we're watching and laughing and singing and dancing along with it. It's something else. And it is tied to reparations. And that's the part of the repair that we have to do. If we don't do that soft power repair, and if I call, whatever you call it, cut a check or create baby bonds or give, we'll just give it back. Or it'd be taken from us. That next generation, it'll just be taken from them again because we don't have the ability to protect it from outside control. That's the reaction I have from listening to Reverend Brown. You know.
Let's go to 602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, good evening. Brother Marcus here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, good brothers. You know, brother Richard, what you said here was true. You know, what you said here, your last statement was true because years ago I was reading a book called The USA, My Larger Prison, written by Robert Harris. He's the same brother that wrote the book, Carlos Cooks and Black Nationalism, from Garvey to Malcolm X. You know, hear a lot about him because he avoided the media, you know, that movement, you know. But, you know, as you look at it, we are in prison. We are prisoners. And they benefit from us being here in prison, see? Just our presence here is a benefit to them, you know, in every way. So, you know, it's a grinding mill, you know, grinding. And you know, I hear as the sister was talking about Detroit last week, you know, what's happening in Detroit, you know, and you know, then you hear what's happening here. But another thing too, you know, there is a news whiteout on this. You don't hear a lot about this year incident, you know, and the media too, you know. So it's with Trump and company, we know what's going on in America. You know, it's you know, but what is our response going to be? That is the main question as a people. What is our response, you know? So I saw today, now, I don't know if you're following what's going on in Africa with Bashir.
Yeah. See?
Yeah, so that dynamic is playing out. But what I want to say on the continent, I think the young people, like I say that young 700 million under 30 population is going to make a change. It's going, you know, and we need to join up with, you know, that generation and help to, you know, steer and assist in whatever way, you know, because, you know, we have no place to go but up. we are at the bottom. We in the sub basement, actually, you know. So there is no other place for us to go but up as a people right now. So, you know, in spite of how things look, we have to be positive by saying, you know what, you know, but it's good if we had some type of organization that could organize, you know, the people in Detroit addressing that situation. People here in Memphis, you know, the people in, you know, down in Louisiana. And we have a some type of network, some type of movement. You know, I don't know, financial movement or what, you know, something to get that economic foot, you know, and that's the main thing our people, you know, we need first, get our economic stabilizer of our people, you know, so I don't know, somebody have an idea, you know, they could present, but we are going to win, I am confident, you know, because you have to remember, we were in chains once. You know, once we were in physical bondage, you know, and we survived that. So, you know, we just need to focus on other people, you know, and you know, we'll do it. And I thank a program like this program that gives us a voice, a guru in the community, you know, because we need more. Anyway, good brothers, thank you. Thank you for the program.
Thank you for your contribution, Brother Marcus.
All right, good brothers. Take care.
Take care.
Richard, they released a report on the and I pulled it down off the Tribune site. The state of the city details split economic personality of Philly. I want to read some of that because some of this report and some of the response from this mayor here goes directly to what Reverend Brown was talking about in New Orleans when that governor got up there and had clergy people stand with him, black clergy, to say that this wasn't a hate crime and to forgive this white supremacist kid, or not kid, this white supremacist a man for burning those churches. It's a parallel. It's a similar response from people with supposedly positions of influence in the black community. And I want to read it and see if you see the same parallel. Before I get to that and read some of this report, you know, I'm listening to Reverend Brown and what he was talking about him going into some of the meetings with other fellow pastors and getting the response that he gets. Oh, here he comes. He's a member of the Black Panthers. Or they'll come back there and tell him, listen, we'll let you speak, but respect my building and stuff like that. You know, Richard, I understand in some of these areas it's difficult for our people to come out and be seen with vocal protest of what's going on. And that's why it's necessary to organize, because, Richard, it's ways that we can all help one another in this struggle. For example, if you're going out being a front man, so to speak, and to voice your dissatisfaction of what's going on in your community, then it's ways that we can all help. For example, if I'm afraid for my job, then I could donate financially to what you're doing. I can be eyes and ears for you. the same way he uses black people to spy on one another. I can be a spook that sat by the door and spy on this man and come back and tell our people what's going on. It's ways that we can give everybody something to do where you don't have to be, I can have you stand out there alone and me just stand on the side, like Cynthia McKinney was saying. We don't have to stand on the side. It's ways that we can all help one another in this struggle and be active parts. So it's, you know, I'm just listening to him, and, you know, when he mentioned about he can organize a protest or something like that, and then they walk down the street, and then he, after the cops come around, he look, and some of the people that's with him is standing on the side like they weren't a part of what he was doing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it's ways, once we strategize, it's ways that everybody can help.
And we have historical blueprints to show that.
Exactly.
I mean, civil rights era. I mean, we can go on and on, but that's
And you're right, because, listen, when King and them got put in jail, it was the farmers that used to put up their land to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
They were actively involved in that without necessarily being involved with marching with King. But they had a job to do. If somebody got arrested, they would make sure they get out.
SNCC, you know, using that, you know, SNCC was the same way when they went in to Mississippi. It was those families that was protecting those young people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh, like you said, it is organized, but it's having the group will and being clear what is the opposition, to be weak doesn't mean that you don't have to be powerful. You know, and right now, it seems to be totally screwed up. You know, we either exert too much power just talking, or we exert no power standing on the sidelines, you know, but not enough, as you say, organized effort around, you know, the overcoming the opposition, being clear what the opposition is, and recognizing that there is some who come out of the same history that is in agreement with the opposition.
Yeah, certainly.
And we ain't got to argue about whether they are. We just have to recognize that we know that they are. And how do we protect ourselves from them? That is, you know, and it can be done. You know, Brother Marcus said, you know, when we stay positive and focused and strategic and, as you say, organizing, it can be done. Yeah. It will be done. It ain't no Ken like it, you know, it's some question about it.
Let me read a little bit of this report, because I want to kind of draw that parallel between what Reverend Brown was saying and what's going on here in the fifth largest city in this country. This article came out of the Philadelphia Tribune. State of the City details split economic personality of Philadelphia. A new study details Philadelphia as a city that is both thriving and faltering. Wait a minute, hold on a second. A new study details Philadelphia as a city that is both thriving and faltering, where the nation's leading poverty rate overshadows its growth. Until the poverty numbers fall, they will remain as they have for years, the context in which many other indicators of the state of the city are judged, according to the Pew Charitable Trust report titled State of the City. The 10th annual report released Thursday shows the city's job growth outpaced national averages. More people, primarily immigrants, moving into the city, and home prices increasing by 63% since 2010. But the poverty rate has remained around 26% for the past 5 years, the highest among the nation's most populous cities. The homicide and homeless rate are up. the home ownership is down, while blacks make up more than 40% of the city's population. The city's largest racial and ethnic group are blacks. They own a mere 2.5% of the region's businesses. The city has more thriving neighborhoods, certainly, than it did a decade ago, but the contrast between thriving and struggling neighborhoods is dramatic as ever, says Larry Eichel, a project director for the Pew Charitable Trust, Philadelphia's research initiative, who worked on the report. Rodney Muhammad, the president of the Philadelphia chapter of the NAACP, said the city's successes ought to be judged by its poverty rate. He said black and brown people are not thriving in the city, many of whom were born and remain in poverty. Driving poverty here is a lack of jobs. These are permanent sandbags holding people back, says Rodney Muhammad. You can't be a world-class city with a permanent underclass. Black and minority-owned businesses, Philadelphia's robust economy and job growth is leaving black and minority businesses owners, the report figures show. The city's average number of jobs in 2018 was the highest since 1991, 725,400 jobs. Over the past decade, the city has averaged roughly 61,000 jobs, although most of the growth has occurred in recent years. The city added more than 15,000 jobs in 2018, over the previous year, outpacing the national average. The city's unemployment rate was 5.5% in 2018, which has reached a new low not seen since 2000. But the national average is 3.9%. But African Americans held 2.5, 1 in 40 of all businesses in the region in 2016, while whites owned 76%, according to the census figures. Now, you heard that right, Richard?
Yeah.
Blacks had 2.5% of the businesses, while whites owned 76% in a city that's majority black. The lack of access to capital has been stifling minority-owned businesses from growing and expanding, says Della Clark, president of the Enterprise Center, which offers capital and training to minority entrepreneurs. The black population in the city continues to remain relatively stable, as it has for decades, but the group's number declined from 42.3% of the population to 40.9% of the population in 2017, while the white numbers have increased from 34.6 to 37%. Blacks made up the majority of the homeless population in a recent citywide count. In January, the city counted 5,788 homeless people during an annual one-night count of those in the street and in emergency shelters and transitional housing and temporary drop-off centers. Blacks accounted for 75% of the individual homeless, according to the report. So, Richard, you see, blacks are accounting for most of the homeless in Philadelphia. They're still the majority of the population. They don't have access to business capital, and blacks held 2.5% of the businesses while whites held 76% in a city that's majority black and has a majority of black elected officials. You see the dichotomy of what's going on in what's the town? Appaloosa. And what was the other town?
Pokeberry.
Pokeberry. You can see the dichotomy. Now, that was the report. Now, here, I'm going to just read a couple paragraphs of what this mayor said. And the writer of the article, do you know this guy, Ernest Owens, Richard?
I've seen him a couple of times. Well, he read a couple of his articles.
He wrote an article, and I assume he's black. Well, he wrote an article, and he, from what he's saying here, he's the only one to challenge this. But let me read what he states. And this is in direct response to this report that was given on the state of Philadelphia. It says, no joke, Kenny thinks overqualified black people are the cause of the city's diversity woes. This is the title of the article by Ernest Owens. Mm-hmm. It says, check this out, Richard. In a room full of black business owners, contractors, and city employees, Kenny told us that what white men in power have said forever, except this time he had his very own twist. Just before the meeting, City Controller Rebecca Reinhart's office had released a report of diversity among the city hired workers. When I asked why it showed that 48.2% of the exempt workforce in the departments under the mayor's authority is white, a significant overrepresentation in a city that is a whole 66% non-white, Kenny gave me a jaw-dropping response. We've had a hard time. This is Kenny's response, Richard. We've had a hard time hiring black people for these jobs because they're so super talented and too overqualified that they choose to run after the private sector instead. They don't want to take a pay cut. Then Kenny bragged about the city solicitor, Marcel Pratt, one of four people of color in Kenny's 14-member cabinet, saying how lucky the city is to have gotten him and how surprised he was that Pratt would choose to take a job for a city, showing how super talented he is. Shocked, I followed up by asking Kenny, so what are you telling me, that black people aren't applying for jobs because they are too overqualified to the point that you have to hire more white people instead? The room got silent, and Kenny got red in his face. Kenny's response, what positions? What are you talking about? He spat back. I don't understand the point you're trying to make. As the moderator jumped in to try to cut off the conversation short, City Commerce Director Harold Epps, another one of the four people of color in Kenny's cabinet, tried to save his boss. Epps blamed attrition for the city's diversity hiring issues, claiming that they make more diverse hires. We lose older ones at the same time, which he argued impacts the numbers. I bet a third grader could guess that even making those diverse hires would easily resolve this issue. But I think everyone, including Epps himself, sensed that the damage had already been done. He wasn't even answering the question that I asked Kenny. Right after Epps spoke, Kenny exited without even giving final remarks to a room full of black business people and voters who were left with more questions than answers. Now, this man, Richard, gives an answer to, according to this reporter, a room full of black business owners, contractors, and city employees, that the reason the city is not more diverse in hiring because blacks are too overqualified. Now, I've never heard a white person say that. Wait a minute, Richard. Hold it. You say that to a room full of black people, and the only person that got upset by it was this reporter. And when he snapped back at the mayor tried to snap back at him, but was defended by, here we go, another offensive lineman, a black person jump in to defend the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing that Reverend Brown was talking about that was happening in two small towns in Louisiana is going on in large cities in this country, where black representation is quick to defend these white folks. I never heard something so stupid. Most white folks don't even answer when you ask, well, how come black people ain't getting hired? They give you some type of political answer rigmarole. This guy gave an answer so stupid. He sounded like Donald Trump. Black people are too overqualified. That's why we can't hire them. What? I never heard a white person give an answer like that. And black people sit there, business owners, other city workers and contractors, and hear that stupid answer, and none of them said anything besides this report.
For the same reason as Reverend Brown brought up, you know, they don't want to lose those contracts. I mean, if you only got you're only 2.5 of the businesses and 75%, and a lot of them they're not working, they're not doing black projects. So those businesses, if they're whatever level, you know, their clients and their customers are a part of those 76% that are actually doing business. And, you know, whether they're, what's that, subsidiary contractors or not, their capital comes from, I mean, if the black businesses aren't capitalized, the businesses that are capitalized by the banks that are existing in this city. So they can't upset that apple cart because that upsets their business. So the, you know, as you say, the same condition to maintain this was that subjugation of a people, whether it's a major, the fifth largest city or in a town, systemic approach is still the same.
The same approach, exactly.
You know, exactly. Because it is a system. And the system is national and international. It's just not here. White, that's why they call it the system of white supremacy, because the system it's been working globally, and it's not a new thing. What is the challenge? Because, you know, when you see, you know, that number and amount of homelessness and poverty, that condition is because 20 years ago, those babies of 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that were getting skills, weren't getting skills. We weren't getting skills. We weren't skills. And I ain't talking about hard skills or doing the labor and whatever, the social interaction skills, because it's a lot of money. And I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, and maybe even if it's a small amount, but if you're not organized, see, if you organize, then you don't need a lot to build. But when you're unorganized and black Philadelphia, and you're thinking short term, then you're not thinking about developing, the real estate, developing the capital formation, or in your own area, putting the right type of political representation. If you're unorganized, and that's the point I hear you say all the time, you're not thinking about that, and you're not thinking about the long game, and you're not thinking about who's your opposition. And we're getting what we didn't prepare for. I mean, I hear Brother Rodney Muhammad, you know, there's individuals who are getting these positions, you know, but, you know, we see that the city council members, they're the ones giving the lands to the developers. These are black city councilors.
Exactly. Remember,
they're giving the land to the developers because they control the land, right? To gentrify the community.
Mm-hmm.
So all those and bankers, the businesses association, the hospitals, the universities, they're giving entitlements to these white young people. They're not just coming from the suburbs. They're coming from, when they come to these universities, they created a program so that they can be able to do internship, created parties so that they can be able to stay. They market to these young people who went to Wharton, Temple, LaSalle, Drexel, to entice them to stay, to fill those jobs that they did not create the public educational system to provide the skill for black people who were here two generations. lock them up, put them in these here reform schools, put us in these reform schools, and now they're closing it down, talking about, oh, we got we find abuse. What's one of these schools? They just Glen Mills or something.
Glen Mills.
They just closed down, talking about they just found abuse. What the hell? I grew up with guys that went to those schools. Y'all ain't know it was no abuse then. Yeah. So it's you know, it gets back to your point, Elliot. You know, how important it is for us to organize and think long term. Because these numbers ain't going to change, and they're trying to squeeze up that you if you look at the demographics of that thing, where are most of the poor people moving move to? They used to be what now they call Center City, South Philly, right? Where you're from, where I'm from, you know, historically Philadelphia, Black Philadelphia. Where are they being pushed? Northeast. You know who used to live in the Northeast? Most of the cops. White cops that worked in the city lived in the Northeast.
Yeah, well, they're coming back to the neighborhoods where you were at.
There you go.
And the thing about it, you know, Richard, similarity between what Reverend Brown was talking about when he said that the state had a Democratic governor in a red state. Now, these things, when I drew the comparison to Philadelphia with the majority blacks and none of them have businesses and most of them are homeless, according to these reports, and then the mayor says some dumb stuff about the reason he can't hire blacks is because they're overqualified. This is a Democratic city. Been Democratic for years. I don't know when the last time they had a Republican mayor in this town. Democratic stronghold. So when you hear these Uncle Thomasinas, like this girl Owens, that made statement, white nationalism didn't do damage to blacks, Democratic policies did. See, she's not ignorant of what she's saying. She's very much aware of what she's saying. She's speaking in behalf of some conservative think tank or whatever to put her up to. But I'm just saying, you know, our people that's intelligent know whether it's Democratic policies or Republican policies. They all bolster white nationalism. This damage we're talking about wasn't done by any Republicans. This is what we see here in Philadelphia. This is Democrats. So it don't matter whether it's Donald Trump administration here or Democratic administration. It's the same result.
And we can see it in Detroit.
Exactly.
St. Louis, Chicago, New York, California. I mean, this, you know, but you shouldn't have brought her up, Elliot, I'm not going to say anything other than the thing that disappointed me the most was that she used her grandfather to try to make her argument.
And didn't one of them white guys a couple of weeks ago use a black prop when the woman stood up and come on.
He was a sharecropper, you know, abused by whites, and then she makes that. I guess I'm saying it was no words I can think of to say.
Yeah. Well, let's go to 215. 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
Fine. Hey, Brother Richard. How you feel, my brother?
I'm right now.
Praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Elliot and Richard, before I talk about y'all subject that y'all got a lot on the table, and I enjoy Reverend Brown and Brother Otis for spot on and what he was saying. Did you and Brother Richard get an invitation to the wedding, Elliot?
What wedding?
Don Lemon. You know, from CNN.
Here we go.
You know, he's from Philadelphia. He's marrying his white fiance. Brother Don, native Philadelphia. He's like 50-something years old, and his white boyfriend is, I think, 35. I just thought you and Richard got in because I didn't get mine, so I thought maybe y'all got yours.
No.
Okay. I digress. I just thought maybe I got y'all. Okay. Wow, can you imagine that? I mean, just the optics of it. And again, I'm not trying to be, beginning to play the optics of it. He got a black man born in native of Philadelphia, rise to prominence as a prominent broad news commentator, and he's marrying a white man. He's 50, so he married a 35-year. So I guess the white man gonna be the white, gonna be the husband. He's gonna be the wife, I guess. I don't know. Wow. Unbelievable. As they say, as Don King would say, Elliot and Richard, only in America. As Don King was so famously said, only in America. Yeah. Well, anyway. I say this other comment very seriously, with a little sense of humor, but seriously. Ernest Owens, you asked Brother, you said to Brother Richard, that Brother Ernest, you said you think he's black. Oh, he's definitely black, Elliot. Not only is he black, but he's openly gay. But that's in there. But one thing I do respect about Brother Ernest Owens and stuff, he did ask the tough question. He did press Kenny, or attempted to press Kenny, whereas all the rest of them Negroes in there, men and women alike, let Kenny get away with that stuff. See, my whole thing, like I say, if somebody's sexual orientation, I don't have to agree with it. As long as you respect me and keep it to yourself and don't push on our children, if you want to engage in that kind of lifestyle, you got to deal with that. But I respect the brother because he did, he say what you want about his, he did press Kenny. And I've seen Ernest on other occasions get with white folks about their racism and stuff. I mean, he said he stepped up to the plate and jumped in there behind more than some of these so-called straight heterosexual brothers and sisters. So, I mean, sometime in life, you got to get props where it's due. You know what I mean, L.A. Richard? I mean, I have to grill his lifestyle, but hey, if he's doing what he has to do and challenging these sisters and stuff like that and these sellout niggas, more power to him. You know?
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it, you know?
Yeah, well, Kenny said that the reason that ain't more blacks getting jobs in Philadelphia is because they overqualified.
I know. And again, Elliot, like you just said, like you and Brother Richard, we all had a wonderful commentary a few minutes ago. Again, it made me think of the speech I played with Brother Malcolm and stuff, one of Malcolm's famous speeches. Boss, you sick boss, when them Negroes rest to defend Kenny. Boss, we sick boss.
I mean,
the house Negro in the field, Negro.
But Joe, what can possess you to, you evidently you heard this statement by this white man. It's so ludicrous. What would possess you to jump to defend it? Let this guy defend his own. What the hell is the matter with some of our people? You're going to jump to defend this guy, and this guy going to get smart. What do you mean by that? What? And then you're going to jump to defend him, and then afterwards he gets up and don't address it and just walks out.
It's a pattern, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and for the time from the wicked listener or just listening around the country, it's a pattern of Negroes going way back from, I guess, from time beyond. They jump, like you said, they jump to defend white folks. And a lot of times, they jump to defend a white man before he could even say something. Because I tell you, on the terrestrial radio station, when you had your esteemed congressman, Mr. Bob Brady, when he was challenged by an elderly black gentleman, and he was challenged about the racism and the criminal justice system and Brother Richard mentioned about Glenn Mills. The car, if I remember correctly, several years ago, he was challenging Bob Brady about schools like Glenn Mills and other schools like Cato and other ones where you know, the Loose Youth Study Center. He was challenging about how young black men and women are treated at these facilities. And before Brady could, and I know Brady was going to lie, because that's how them devils do, but be that as it may, Brady didn't even get a chance, because Brady did attempt to try to answer it, but before Brady could say anything, you had Cody and them jumping up to defend him by Brady. I'm like saying, let this white man speak for himself. You know what I mean? We always want to, speak, let Bob Brady's an elected official. He don't need Cody or Glenn or anybody else to defend. He can well speak for himself. Even if he's lying, I at least like want to hear what the white man got to say. I don't need you as a black mouthpiece to speak for him. Let him speak for himself. And again, not to throw no shade on nobody because I know the sister going through things, but Mae Mason, legendary talk show host, she had a bad habit of doing that. She had these white people on like the Jones Specters of the world, the Joan Chijewskis, and whenever black people challenged them, Mary felt the need to butt in and speak for them. Let these white folks speak for what I'm saying? I don't know why we have this mentality that we got to speak for these white folks. Let them speak for themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It just boggles the mind. We just feel as though we got, you know, that boss, we sick boss, you know, it's just amazing. But I'll say this, Ellen and Richard, and I'll get off some other calls to get on. As you see, Ellen, with this gentrification, you see, I'm sure you and Richard, y'all keep up with current events. You see right now, members of the Jewish community right here in Philadelphia, they upset because they against their own version of gentrification, because you know you heard about this thing about Jewelers Row, right, Ellen and Richard?
Yeah.
Well, you got these rich white developers, and this time to tell the irony. That's why I say karma karma can be a real bitch and stuff sometimes. So when you throw a boomerang, it usually comes back and hits you in the face. So you spit in the wind, and it comes back and hits you right in the face. Well, the irony in all this, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, is this: you got Jewish families down there on Jewelers Row. Some of them jewelry businesses, they've been, you know, family businesses through the decades. You know, great-great-grandpa Silverstein had it. Then this other one had it. And it went through the generations and stuff. So some of them jewelry stores down in Jewelers Row are like 60, 70 years old because it's been family-owned business. You know, see, that's why I say white folks, this is something that this is part of reparations like you were saying Brother Otis was saying too earlier. This is part of generational wealth. You know, it's not just about cutting a check, like Brother Otis said. This is part of generational wealth. So white folks have been practicing this for years, generational wealth. Well, anyway, these stores have been passed from generation to generation. And like I said, many of them down there are Jewish-owned. And the irony is this. These rich white developers that's coming in, they already, as you know, many of the stores and got their notices, they got to be vacated by, so I think, sometime in May or whatever like that. Many of the developers that want these Jewish merchants, these jewelry owners to vacate Jewelers Row down there are Jewish real estate developers. Don't you see the irony, Ellen and Richard? they being skewed by their own people. So these rich white Jewish real estate developers, they're going to be moving out Jewish families that's been in business for years, for 60, 70 years down there on Jewelers Road. They've been skewed by their own ilk. You follow me?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the irony and everything and stuff. So now, and that's what the professor was saying on the terrestrial radio show, now these white folks, especially these Jewish people, now they crying about gentrification and stuff like that. Well, welcome to the party, y'all. Y'all seen it happen to black people over the last several years. Y'all didn't think it was going to, you didn't eventually think that was going to come back to bite you in the behind now. So, I mean, it's just so funny. As I say, sometimes in life, man, karma can be a real bitch, man. I'm telling you. So now they crying the blues now, trying to get Kenny to save them. There ain't too much Kenny can do because these people got the money and these many of these jewelry stores that have been in business for 60, 70 years, they're going to be out of there. It's going to be big condos and stuff right down on Jewelers Row. So when you go down Jewelers Row, probably this time late in the summer, I guess later on this summer or fall, many of them jewelry stores will be gone. You're going to see another condos or at least the beginning of the building of these condos down there. So Jewelers Row won't be Jewelers Row as we know it. So, again, karma can be something, man. When you stand by and let it happen to another group of people, which is black people, white people, never, I mean, Jewish people, white, whatever you want to call these Europeans, they never learn that somehow in life, like Dr. King said, what affects us affects you eventually. It's going to come back to bite you in the behind, too. So now they're getting a taste of it themselves now. So, hey, it is what it is, okay? But anyway, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, thanks for the time. I'll sit back and listen to the rest of the show.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brother Elliot. Thanks, Brother Richard.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's go to 646.
Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, how are y'all good brothers today? It seems that old little Joe was talking about Don Lemon. Don was out there gathering a monkey man twisted sister Yoruba, huh? Lord have mercy. What are we going to do with these Negroes? But I'm really basically tonight calling to ask my good brother Richard a question.
Uh-oh.
It's within your pay grade, Brother Richard, so I know it'll be answered.
Jay, can you get either closer or get the, because it's causing an echo if you're on a hands-free. It's causing
okay,
like
is
a...
better, Brother Elliot?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's good.
All right. All right, Elliot. Listen, Brother Richard, my question to you is, what must black people do to get reparations?
Didn't you ask that last time?
No, I did ask you that question, Brother Richard. I'm asking you now because, you know, I've been, you know, observing the shenanigans that have been going on all week, and I know you have been. So I was just wondering, have you come up with anything since the last time we have may have spoke about it?
You
him and Harry, no need to him and Harry. You too smart for that. Just
no. It's just you know, I technically you know what's going on. Going on is, you know, I support whatever is going on. But I definitely have a different view. And as I've always said, you know, I'm on the other side of the reparation or repair position. And I'll be insistent on that because I just believe, you know, that until we take control of our own selves and repair ourselves, nobody can do that. Then whatever we're looking for from the state is really just a non-starter. So if you ask me from that perspective, I've always said, one, we have to take ownership of ourselves, which I don't believe we have. We don't have ownership of ourselves. And I think any African and on the planet at this point, and you know, but speaking to North America, we do not own our own self, our own physical self, our own mental self. And I speak own in an economic sense, and I speak own in a spiritual sense. And until we do, then we can provide the kind of healing to really create what I hear Brother Elliot always say, the type of organizational outcome or coalescing we need to actually get power. Now, since that's my personal view, but when we're talking about the what's going on now and, you know, the what is being presented to the state as far as, say, H.R. 40, what's being presented by different social movements in relationship to whether it be in COBRA or any other group as far as trying to get compensation from the state, I'll support that. I believe in supporting that because I think that that's one step towards us getting that realization that we have to, in the end, we'll never get what we're looking for unless we get ownership of ourselves.
Well, you know, Brother Richard, I basically couldn't agree with you anymore. The only thing that I could basically add is this Dog and Pony Show will be over by, I would say, August of 2020. I think once the Democratic convention is over and the nominee is set, there will basically be no more discussion of reparations. Now, by that time, which would be a year and 4 months, will we be able to get ourselves together to put forward an agenda to maybe extend it or to maybe do a little bit of damage if we aren't heard? That's the $1,000 question.
But, you know, and Elliot, if you don't mind me asking, Brother Jay, you know, because one thing I've been wrestling with all week and hearing you, something you just said last week, relationship to sovereignty, and you know, I'm a believer of that, and that's another social movement. And I like what Brother Ori here and then Cobra is saying about peoplehood, and I like what Brother I think it's Mustafa who's saying about getting confederation, you know, through the international law. But when I hear you speak about sovereignty, the question I, you know, kind of trying to unpack that. And we've interviewed Brother
Esseron, I always mess up his name, who wrote the book about sovereignty or sovereign thinking. And I believe in sovereign thinking. So coming from the perspective of sovereignty, looking at reparations, you were mentioning Brother Baruti. So how do you see that unpacking? I'm curious of that, because I think it's important that we look at these different approaches and understand. So when we're talking about sovereignty and you're looking at the political machinery, or, you know, how do you juxtapose those two? What is the process of applying sovereignty?
I don't see those two coalescing honestly with one another, because most Black people are not looking for sovereignty. Most Black people are trying to find a better place within this system. So whereby if you're talking about reparations in the sense of America, that's a construct that is going to be dealt with here. When you're dealing with sovereignty, you're looking at putting together coalitions to, in a sense, deal with here, but also to build towards going back home and helping develop back home. Now, one could say, well, maybe if we were to receive something economically here, we could maybe use that to go back home to create trade and things of that nature. But I don't see it as the same. I don't see it as a similar type entity, because in all honesty, Black people have given the choice to develop ourselves here in hopes of going back home to develop back home. 90% of them will look at you like you crazy. The sad thing is, we can't even make ourselves whole here to be able to, within the future, compete.
So, you know what I mean? Yeah, and that's why I'm asking. So what do you see is that, you know, then not looking at what that 90% is doing, then from the perspective, I mean, what are the steps of those, and if you don't mind me saying, those of us who are looking towards sovereignty, what is going on that
there's a difference. I don't even equate the reparations movement with that.
I accept that, you know, because that would go speak to my point about self-healing. You know, so that's why I'm kind of trying to push for us to explore, then what do you see is the movement that is actually moving towards sovereignty?
I see us trying to figure out how we can come together here to build up institutions that could place us in a position to, you know, have them incorporated here and abroad, and to move forward to finding some place on the continent that we could go there and to build and to exchange and to repair ourselves on all levels, culturally, economically, spiritually, and everything. I don't define myself as the end place in my liberation as an African in America. I define it as a place that maybe like minds could come together and we could figure out how we can go back home and build up home. I mean, I can leave tomorrow and go back home, but in all essence, you know, what would I be going back home to? What would be the connections? Who would be the people that I would really interact with? You know what I mean? I don't have no family members that's going to go back home. You know what I mean? So the thing is, you want to be able to build a group here that have like-mindedness and then move forward, move to be in a position. Like I know a brother on Facebook that I'm pretty cool with. He's in Gambia. You know, he done set up, you know, a business there. And, you know, he interacts with people. here in America. That's what I'm looking at. You know what I mean? I'm even thinking about maybe going to visiting Gambia. You know what I mean? So those are the things that I'm looking at. That's I feel the direction that we should be going in, because if you even look at this whole reparation movement, you have in COBRA and these ADOS. Now, I mean, I listen to a lot of people talk a lot of smack about NCOBRA, saying that they've been around for 40-some years and they ain't really done nothing, and now you got this new group coming along that's making a little noise, and now they want to fuss and fight with one another. To me, that's the ultimate form of silliness. That's the ultimate form of BS to me. I become more annoyed with it, and I have no respect, in all honesty, if the truth be told, for either groups. Because you're looking to achieve something, but y'all ain't even intelligent enough to come together and work with one another based on nothing of real value. I mean, and then you want to invoke things like COINTEL. You know what I mean? Now, if that's the case, then you should already know from history that y'all need to come together, that y'all need to go behind closed doors and, you know, work whatever y'all need to work out to be a united front to push this thing forward. But to me, it's just a divided situation that ain't gonna get no better. I mean, it's funny because I don't know if you noticed, well, maybe Richard, you've seen it. I don't know if Elliot's seen it, because I don't know how, you know, on social media Elliot is. But did you see this whole thing that happened, I think it was 2 weeks ago, at the gentrification conference with Roz Baraka and this guy Mark Thompson of Sirius Radio? You know, the funny thing is, in all of this, and y'all gonna laugh when I say this, there was an incident between this brother Africa and Mark Thompson, and I thought that Africa was Sean. You know what I mean? Now, did you see the video, Richard?
Yeah, I seen it.
You know, when I first saw it and I was listening to it, I started laughing to myself, and I'm saying, is that Sean? So I texted him, and, you know, he didn't get back to me, but I know it's not Sean. But it's just the whole thing there was, here it is, the guy's talking to Mark, and, you know, I've dealt with Mark before. He's a belligerent a-hole at times. And here it is, he put his hands on the brother, which is a no-no. And what happened was, the following Monday, he goes on the radio, and he starts talking about, well, he was attacked, and blah, blah, blah. So what to find out is, now they're trying to kick him off of Sirius Radio. Now, mind you, what nobody's really putting into context in this whole thing is, this was the first radio show host that Sirius Radio ever had. Check that out. Think about that. And now you're going to turn your back on him? You see what I'm saying? So these are the little things that, if we really understood our position and how we're being manipulated and used and put in these fictional fights, we would deal and address this in a whole different manner. So that's why, you know, I laugh at this whole reparation thing. To me, like I said, it'll be done with around June or August of next year. And they'll go on to something else. You know what I mean? Instead of preparing each other to be at the point to where as we could build something as a people to do something. But, you know, that we don't think like that. So now what's basically going to happen is, for the next year or so, it's going to be a constant petty fiction between these so-called groups that's going to lead to anything. And basically, when white folks get tired of hearing about it and the media decides they're going to shut it down, then it'll be shut down. And in the process, people will have been manipulated, and, you know, people will be placed in situations to hopefully some will eat and some won't eat. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. And then we'll just be in the same situation. And then, you know, the reality is if things don't go their way in 2020, they'll find someone else to blame or they'll find something to blame. But they'll never look in themselves in the mirror and say that, you know, these are the things that we need to do to embrace the community. These are the things that we need to embrace others. I mean, because, you know, they basically feel as though black folks will give it to them because, you know, they're scared of the boogeyman Trump. You know what I mean? It's like he got them on, you know, remote control or whatever in their action of never voting for him. But you know what the funny thing is? Nobody talks about the corruption that he's involved in and the manner in which he's being able to get away with the corruption. You know what I mean? And how the narrative is being presented. The saddest thing about black folks is they never understand the narrative that is being presented to them by their oppressor. And they just go along with the narrative if there's certain code words that are spoken, if there's certain things that are said to them, and there's certain appeasements that they feel they will get. And in the reality, when you think about it, if we be honest and we really do a serious assessment of it, what did black people get for the 8 years that Barack Obama was in office? I mean, nobody could really tell you what we really tangibly got that made your life better from the 8 years that he was in office, from the time he began to the time that he ended. You know what I mean? Now, the flip side is with this clown that's in office, there's going to be some people who's going to honestly be able to say if he gets out of office in the next 2 years that's in the Midwest, they're going to say to themselves, we really, really got screwed. Certain segments are going to say, we really got screwed. I know friends of mine that make good money are complaining and bitching and moaning to me about their taxes, how they didn't get the type of returns that they got last year. Now, I did all right because I have real estate. But the point of the matter is there's a whole bunch of people that are, like, upset, but they have no way to express it. But then again, when you talk about, let's say, the milk farmers, let's say the soybean farmers, let's say some other maybe farming industries, I mean, these people are really suffering. But the media is not talking about or articulating to the United States people the suffrage that these farmers are facing in the Midwest.
But even though they're, even if I'm the little bit I can probably decipher if I'm listening, the little, even though they're suffering, as you say, or they're not benefiting, they're still supportive.
Oh, because they believe in what? They believe in white nationalism. They believe, so, they believe it, they believe in holding form to what? Their whiteness. Black people don't understand that.
So that becomes,
don't do that.
That becomes more valuable, and when you're talking about asset, than capital, that their identity and their control of their identity as a capital asset is more valuable than even their trade. That's what's being said.
I would agree that it is, because if you look at it and you put it into context, community is the essence, what makes you as a people hold firm, hold steady. It's the community. You go out there in the Midwest, all of those people that are catching hell, they're white folks. And they live by a code of whiteness. So they're going to look out for one another on a certain level. You know what I mean? I mean, I believe some of them in the back of their mind know that they made a mistake by putting this clown in office. But the thing is, they live by the code of whiteness. We're the only ones who don't live by a cultural code.
ethnicity code. We're the only ones that want to integrate with any other group for our so-called survival. We're the only ones who want to have so-called allies that when it's all said and done in whatever movement or whatever thing that they're collectively doing with the other group, we end up at the bottom of it with a foot in our behind. From the 1950s to present day, you cannot name me one coalition that has been with blacks in any other ethnic group where we've come out ahead. There's not one movement. And a dishonest person will try to tell you that there is. But when you ask them to identify, they can never identify, and they'll go on to the next thing. Now, I think you're pretty sharp, Richie. I would like to ask you that question. You name me one coalition with another ethnic group that we have worked so-called hand-in-hand with that when it's all said and done, we've either been equal or we haven't got a foot in our behind. Name me one thing.
No, I don't see any. Yeah.
So what do that tell you if you're sitting down talking a reality with your children? If you're saying this is the position that you're in, and then when you look at it, you look at every other ethnic group within any city that one lives in, that there's a strong population of that ethnic group, they have a community. But when you think about black folks, you understand what I'm saying? And we really talk about community and the essence of community. Name me some place in Philadelphia where the majority of the community is black and they own all of the businesses and the homes in that community.
No.
Any place in Philly?
No, there's no geography. But
I live in Harlem and there's not no place. But I'll say this to you. Brooklyn, they have Jamaicans. They have Hispanics. They have every other ethnic group has community. And in Manhattan, there's no community. In Queens, there's Indian community. There's the Jamaican community. There's the Spanish community. At one time, there was a vibrant black community, but that's no longer. I mean, it's just realities, man, that we as a people never really honestly sit down and talk about, and we don't face. You cannot be a vibrant people in 2019 and not be in no position at all to sustain your people on no level. On no level. That's crazy.
The only thing I say to this for me is, you know, it, being in my head is two things. I think there is a community. I think there is community. And I think there is a developing sovereign community. Now, how visible does it control geography? No, I'll give that. But there are individuals, families who are actually in the process of taking self-ownership. How are they doing that? They're doing that by, you can see it in the Nexus, and you bring up Baruti. Those children who go to that school are a part of that community. Do they control a geography? No. Are they being developed? I mean, and has that been going on? Has the institutional development a part of a sovereign development? I would speculate yes. Is there one in Chicago? I would say yes. Those who are doing homeschool, is there a small as it may be, are they who are developing the, and the only reason why I'm saying children, because I see that as the natural asset. I see that as a part of the actual wealth, not necessarily money. And I see that as a mechanism towards a development, towards trade, because once we develop our own human capital, we are controlling our own self-interest. And I also see that as a part of the healing process, because we're getting to certain values.
But Richard,
Now, how that is that big as the immigrant Jamaican community or the immigrant?
But Richie, think about it this way. Think about it this way. All of what you're saying is cool, but that's a 20-year process, brother. Let me finish the point because it's real. You got to understand what you're talking about doing, and you talking about what may be in place right now moving forward is something that other groups done did for the last 40 years. Do you see how far behind we are? Because the same thing that you're talking about was done when immigrants started coming over here back in the 60s and the 70s, getting jobs, buying homes, and doing all of those things.
But those,
you know what I mean?
But those immigrants,
that's how far behind we are.
But those immigrants, because the African, the nationalist, the sovereign community that was developing 50 years ago, they were decimated. They were intentionally decimated by the state. A generation was taken off the chessboard intentionally. Yeah, those immigrants weren't here. And they were
They were here. And what they were doing was, they were saying that they were so-called allies in a certain sense, but what they were doing was using the things that were supposedly given to us to, as one would say, repair us in a sense, affirmative action and things of that nature. They were using it and building a community for themselves.
You're missing my point. The reason they were able to use it is because we were by the state, whether you call it COINTEL program, call it police, call it FBI, or you call it mass incarceration. That was a removal policy by the government.
Yeah, but why was it, though? That's the thing we never talk about as a community, because we were divided as a people, one going in one direction, these integrationists, and then you had others who were trying to fight the system to give us what we basically needed, was to be able to be independent, to be able to govern ourselves, to be able to be respected as men and women. And in the process, they manipulated everybody.
And then both of them
What's happening with reparations.
And both of them were taken off the chessboard.
No, they both wasn't taken off the chessboard. No, no, no. Certain sides were absolutely taken off of the chessboard, but how could you be taken off the chessboard when you got Jesse Jackson's, the Al Sharpton, the Andrew Jackson's, the CBC, the Negroes there as the gatekeepers? Come on, man. You know what I mean? I mean, the only so-called, as one would say, aka revolutionary we have, or I refer to him as the threat monger, would be Farrakhan. And I mean, come on, man. Anytime they want to crush him, they'll crush him, whatever. But you got to give him one. You got to give him somebody to make him think that he's the boogeyman. So I understand his position. Most people don't understand his position. But when you talk about so-called black leadership, who are you talking about? You talking about Jesse? You talking about all of these other people whose agenda is what? To try to bring you into whiteness, to prepare you to be able to serve white people. They're not preparing you to be independent. You understand what I'm saying? If they was, then you would have to compete. It's like I always argue with people when they say, well, I send my kid to public school and I don't like the way the teacher is teaching them or treating them and all this and that. I asked them this one simple question. Do you really expect that cracker to educate your child when that cracker child has to find a place for himself and the prospects in this country is diminishing? I mean, you know, you now have a position in this country to where you can teach your own child. I mean, it's probably more easier now to educate your own child than we were coming out of Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and all of those things. I mean, if you really want to educate your child, it's there. You can do it. That's why whenever I hear some parent crying about the public school education system, I laugh at them. You're a joke.
tell them straight up you're a joke, because in all honesty, you really don't want to put the hard work in to take your child to the next level, and you don't want to really do the necessary things that it takes to be able to educate your child. So you're pushing it on someone else who don't give a damn about your child. Now, as they say, they'll throw up in your face, oh, there's the blind. You remember the movie Blind Eye, and you remember things like that. And I always tell them, those Negroes were nothing but commodities to the white folks. Because if you notice, as those black kids became successful, what did they do? They took care of their white gatekeeper, their white so-called protector. It's just like a Negro who gets a big contract in the NFL, the NBA, and all of that, and go out there and get him a damn white woman. You ain't doing nothing but giving it back to white folks. You know what I mean? I mean, think about this, and I got to run after this. O.J. Simpson left his black wife, got together with Nicole Brown, and took her whole family on the come up. Think about that. Always remember that. Her family was basically white trash. He came along and took her sisters, the daddy and the mama, out of the lifestyle that they was living as white trash, and improved upon their lives. That's what he did. That's what he did for a white woman. Okay? But he left his black woman for that. So, you know, we really got to learn how to start putting things into context and understand that we at war with these white people. This is no game. And all they ever do is manipulate us, because for some reason we can't figure out how to sit down at the table with one another, like Malcolm said, close the door, shut our mouths, and take care of our business. So whereby if I don't hear that Yvette Cornell and Antonio Moore are not at the Inkobra meeting in June, then I'm like, you know, they're full of games. I mean, I even go as far as this. If they don't want to go, send a representative. Send a representative to that meeting, someone that could articulate your positions and that has the ability to negotiate. And I think we hear the perfect candidate twice a week. I ain't going to call his name because I don't want him calling me up, cursing me out. But everybody know who I'm talking about. But that's what they should do. That's what really, if you really about business, That's what I would say. Okay, I can't for some reason function with these guys, but I think you can be a type of individual, a mediator, to go in there and articulate our position, and let's see if we could figure out how we can work together. And then you do the same in October, and let's try to figure this thing out. Because believe me, if we don't figure it out, like I said, come June or August, this show is going to be over. But listen, I'm going to go have me a nice cup of tea, and I got to go to sleep, man. I got to get up. I got running around to do early in the morning. You know, when you get old, you need at least eight hours sleep. Right, Richard? You know what I mean? You know, you don't get 8 hours sleep, you're not right. And I got an old man I got to deal with at like 9 o'clock in the morning, man. And this old cracker, he's something else, man. So I gotta have my wits about me. So I'm gonna have a couple of tea, and I'm gonna get like 8-9 hours to be bushy eye and bright tail like Richard is on Mondays when he go back to see the daddy. So Richard, don't lose your keys. Brother Elliot, enjoy tomorrow and Saturday. You know, people gotta come in there and look good, man. You know?
Peace.
And have a beautiful night. Great African. Be good.
Peace.
Take care.
Richard, we'll come up to the end of another program, man.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to read what happened at Brother Ezra Olarone's function, but I want to get him on within the next week or two to kind of give us a recap. And plus, it was a couple of people there that I'm interested in getting on the program. you get a chance to read that article, you'll see what I'm talking about if you check out that article that was in the Tribune. In fact, I'll send you the link. Well, you said you can't open it because of you had opened up some other ones.
Yeah. I think I did. Well, I'll see. Maybe I can get it online somewhere where I can be able to read it. But I did get it.
Yeah. So if you read it, there's a couple of interesting comments made by some of the leadership that was sent there that I find very interesting. I want to try to either network with Professor Alarone or somehow get their contact. And even Dusty Baker or Robert Bell, to get them on to talk about their initiative and them recruiting black STEM young folks to be involved is very interesting and something that's needed. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting next couple of weeks to some of the folks lined up to come in for conversation and to kind of show some of the work that they've been doing. You know, that think tank that he established with some of the young people there has been a couple of years in the making, Richard, if you remember when he asked us to bring some of them on and they were on. I'm going to reach back out to them because maybe they're at the point now where they might want to have something ongoing so they can have the dialogue. That was the start of their group then. So and we can see that they stayed at it. And he stayed at it. I mean, that's the fruits of his labor when you see these young people getting involved internationally with brothers and sisters here and on the continent. So it's interesting to see the kind of like the culmination of what they've been doing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so we'll continue continue conversation on Sunday. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Play such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. Problem.
save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.